Hey, we're back. Sorry for the break there. We're back with another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Had a couple of weeks where we were kind of traveling and doing different things. But
just be honest, we're on the Italian Riviera for the month of August, like all good Europeans.
That would be nice.
My dog just puked on the floor, by the way.
Did he?
Anyway.
Starting this episode off right.
We were away for a few weeks. Away. Otherwise, unable to do the podcast. So I hope everyone had a great summer. And now it's September. We're back at it.
That's right. Actually, it was good to meet up with you in person. We had a quick lunch the other day in Connecticut.
That's right. Yeah. That's fun. We were in Fairfield, Connecticut. I was down there visiting some family and friends. Brian came down.
Yep.
IRL, baby.
Good stuff. Cool, man. So yeah, we're back at it. Again, we've got some guest episodes coming up in the next couple of weeks, but I think this week it'll just be you and me. We'll talk about some new developments in audience ops, and I think we'll probably have another updates episode coming soon next week.
Yeah. We got to catch up on what we're up to, but this week we're gonna grill Brian on why he has the balls to launch a software product in the middle of everything with audience ops, and kind of what convinced you to do it, where the idea came from, and where you are in the process.
Yeah, so I guess just like an official announcement, if you will. I know that I've been talking about this software product and writing about it to the email list. I haven't been totally clear about what it is and what's going on with it, but like, it's official. We're moving forward with it. It's called Audience Ops Calendar, and it's gone through a couple of iterations already, just in the design and the positioning and the focus of the product. But as of today, we now have 12 prepaid customers for the product, and we can talk all about how that went and the process for going through that and the next step from here. So today it's, we're getting into late September now. I'm interviewing developers and we'll be deciding on a developer and starting off the actual sprints and the development cycles to start off like October 1st. And then the goal is to ship an MVP of this thing to the small group of beta customers before the end of this year, which I think is, maybe a little bit aggressive given the size and scope of this thing, but then really launch it to the public early next year, 2017. So
good for you for having that patience, because I always assume anything in the development world, it can't possibly take longer than 2 weeks. And then I get frustrated that it takes longer than 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, everybody I talk to, even when I tell them that timeline, they're like, yeah, no, you're looking at like 12 months. And I don't know.
Yeah. I almost feel almost, I don't actually feel bad for my development team, but I almost feel bad for them for having to deal with me and the stress on the timelines.
Well, like you kind of opened it up with that question of like, why would I do this when I have audience ops going? And I guess I just want to kind of talk about that just a little bit. So earlier today, I was rereading an article, like a blog post that I wrote 18 months ago, right around the time when I was launching audience ops for the first time. I think that was before we even had customer number one. I was writing at that point that, I wanted to launch a productized service, or I wanted to launch a new company using a productized service, mainly because I was not in a position to launch a software product at the time. I had just been coming out of the exit of Restaurant Engine, and I didn't necessarily want to invest whatever money I had from that into building software. I wanted to kind of, get some security and buy a house and kind of put that aside. So
is that because you see software as inherently risky, or it's just that the day revenue comes in the door is extended outward in software?
Yeah, it's mainly that. I've never been against this whole idea of a SaaS. I think it's a fantastic business model, but the reality is it's really hard to get to launch. And then after you launch, it takes a long time to build up a significant amount of revenue to make it a viable, sustainable business. I wasn't necessarily in a position to seek out funding. I wasn't really interested in that. I'm still not really interested in that right now. So I've always been going the self-funded route. And at the time, 18 months ago, I wanted to launch Audience Ops as a service because I knew that would be the fastest way to grow revenue. And it was. We had revenue within a month. And so now we're 18 months into it, and revenue and profit continues to grow in the service. We've got a team of 20 people. It's basically providing for my basic needs in terms of the, you know, like paying the bills and whatnot. So now, and we have a bit of profit left over to reinvest into new products. And so that's where we're at today. And the new product that we're going to be doing is this software tool called Audience Ops Calendar. I had been kicking around ideas for like a training product, and we've been dabbling in the WordPress plugin stuff, but this is going to kind of take over and be the big new product from Audience Ops. The service is not going to go anywhere. That's going to continue to run. And even this product is actually going to kind of power the service in many ways. It's kind of built out of our processes that we've been learning about and refining through the service. Now we're going to build this software tool that kind of automates a lot of what we do and adds a new layer of stuff that we can do. It's called Audience Ops Calendar, and it came out of our process that we've been doing for clients with content marketing. And it's essentially a calendar. And if you wanted to check out, we have like an explainer page over at audienceops.com/calendar. Not a whole lot in terms of screenshots are there, but we've got some very rough, like keynote cartoony wireframe, not even wireframes, just like illustrations of it and some descriptions there. I do have detailed wireframes finished that I've been passing around to people. But yeah, that's where things are at right now.
I think you start off in the right place. The larger context of if you want to launch a software product, you have to acknowledge that it takes a long time to get revenue. You need to be kind of in the right place for that. So not going about that first and launching the service and now having the software product come out of the service, I think that's it's a good, realistic, smart way to kind of approach it, that step. It's almost like the stair-step model that Rob talks about. It's just instead of over a 5-year span, it's like a 1-year span. But it is taking things one step at a time.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think now I'm in a much better position to venture into something like this than I was 18 months ago.
I was about to say, how long has it been in the service? 18 months?
Yeah, I think almost 18 months.
Okay. All right, so now dig in. You're running Audience Ops day to day. And does this idea come out of like a pain, a need? I want to dig into the calendar thing. It's obviously not like, it's not like Sunrise. It's not a Google Calendar add-on. It's its own thing. So what,
right,
where'd it come from?
Yeah, it is born out of several small pains in our process. We do a ton of things manually. We've got a ton of systems and things that we've refined over the last year and a half with Audience Ops. There are pains around tracking performance of content that Google Analytics really kind of falls short, especially when you start to try to track performance of individual blog posts. And you can, you know, dig through Google Analytics and get the performance of one particular page on your site or one post. But what you really want to do is track the performance of every post so you can start to compare performance and see what's actually working, what's not working. And so there are pains related to that and generating reports. But then another big part of it is just the planning aspect. And we use Trello a bit. We use spreadsheets for editorial calendars. We use WordPress to a certain extent. And what happens is, and those are okay, but really just the whole process is disjointed. We've got several different tools and we're doing different things in different places that little bits and details kind of fall through the cracks. And what we want to be able to do is see the whole point of building kind of a project management tool, but building it in the form of a calendar, is that we're focused on recurring content. So it's focused on helping you manage any sort of content that happens on a recurring basis, like articles, social media posts, podcast episodes, videos. If you're doing monthly webinars, if you're doing quarterly white papers, these things need to be produced with multiple team members doing different things. And those tasks need to be assigned on an automatic recurring basis. So the checklists, the to-do lists are a big focus of this. And you'll have template checklists built off of like our recommended checklist. Of course, you can customize them and make your own. But basically, every time you have a blog article, it'll have this checklist attached to it. And those checklists would have tasks with milestone due dates assigned to different roles on your team, like the writer, the editor, the virtual assistant, the founder, whoever's working on what. And as you move let's say you reschedule an article from one Friday to the next Friday, it'll automatically adjust all the recurring tasks to match up with the schedule of your content. And you can push back articles that are behind it. So it just makes more sense to plan it in the form of a calendar than anything else, like Trello cards or spreadsheets and that kind of stuff.
All right. I'm getting the visual of what it does stronger, right? So if I know I want to publish a blog post on September 25th, when I set that up, it's almost like, yeah, the calendar seems like the center of that. But then once you schedule it, instead of trying to think through or remember or find where all the process is laid out of what needs to happen before that blog post gets published, once you set that up, that moves with you.
Yeah.
When you set up a new blog post.
Yeah, but you don't have to think about it for September 25th and then again on October 4th and then again in December. From the outset, you set up a schedule. You say, I want to be publishing blog posts every Monday or every Friday, or I want to be publishing a new video every Thursday. So that schedule is built into your calendar, and then your calendar expects, it'll have these like open spaces like, okay, we need a blog post for this Thursday, we need a blog post for next Thursday. Then you can have a running list of content ideas that automatically populate the next available spot in your schedule to keep the whole thing kind of running like clockwork. And then as things get added to the calendar, the relevant people get assigned the tasks, and those tasks are assigned by date, moving backwards from when the published date is expected.
Right. So all the pieces that need to get put in place before it's published are assigned ahead of time and to the right people. All right. So who's this for, right? At first glance, you're like, wait a minute, how many audience ops are there? But it doesn't sound like it's just for you. Are you kind of tailoring it for an internal team? Let's say a software company or an agency or someone that, basically anyone that publishes content regularly.
Yeah, so, and that's actually a really good question, because it's, I did a little bit of a slide deck that I've been showing to those pre-purchase customers. And that was one of the slides, was like, who is this for? So I laid out three ideal customers for this, and almost everybody kind of overlaps with at least two of them. There's the solo founder, so someone who's on their own, they're doing content all by themselves, or they plan to do more content soon. This tool helps them be more consistent with content, and it just gives them a process and to be a little bit more standardized, because they haven't done it, or they're just not consistent with it. The next step up is our teams. So if you're a team, this could be anything from like a two-person partnership up to someone who outsources to a couple of freelancers, up to larger organizations with multiple people. So they're using like different tools. They're very disjointed. They're flipping between different places. They have trouble measuring ROI from content. So the whole process is just kind of disjointed for them, and this brings it all together. That's the second group. The third group would be agencies. So people doing kind of like what Audience Ops does. If you serve clients and you do content for clients, or even social media or any other sort of like recurring marketing work for clients, this tool is designed around our process, or designed to give you that process to enable you to manage lots of content for lots of clients and generate reports, white label them, put your own branding on them, give your clients guest access to see their calendars, get approval on content from clients. It's really not just the calendar and scheduling stuff, but there's also like automated social media postings based on the published date. There's automated email outreach, which is interesting. There are a couple other automation things built into it.
Outreach to who?
So for example, if you're doing like influencer outreach, let's say you have a blog post and you want to let 5 or 10 key influencers know, like, hey, this article just went live, I think you'll be into it. You can pre-write those emails ahead of time and have the system just send them out, 3 weeks later when the thing publishes. Or if you're doing podcast episodes, you're interviewing guests and you want to let the guests know, hey, your episode just went live. You can write that at the time that you upload the episode. You don't have to like set yourself a reminder and do it later. As I was doing these customer development calls, a person suggested like you could use that feature to let your whole team know. If you've got like a team of 10 or 12 people, hey, everyone, we got a new blog post out today. like it, share it, you know, you can just like queue up those emails ahead of time.
Yeah. Or if you have your crew, you know, just a few friends, a mastermind group or anyone that helps you promote regularly and you help promote their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You can keep a common list of people that you always come back to and send stuff to. And like,
are you looking at niching, or is it, because it sounds pretty wide, but the truth is this is a wide problem, right? E-commerce companies use this, software companies, agencies. A lot of people these days look at investing in publishing their own content as just a normal part of marketing these days. A lot of companies that I know, that is their entire marketing strategy. that's kind of what they do.
I think that to a certain extent, it is a little bit niched down, but it is broad. It really is designed for managing content marketing. And I mean, and you can go a little broader than that. It's designed for recurring marketing tasks, but it's really best suited for managing content. And that content could be in the form of articles or videos or webinars or podcasts and things, and social media. But the combination of feature sets here is really designed for if you're doing content in your company or if you're doing content for clients, that's really what it's best suited for.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily bad that it's broader. This is a giant need.
Yeah, and I would say that our done-for-you service, the productized service, that is very niched down. You know, we're really focused there on working with like B2B software companies and other productized services, and mostly online companies or serving online business audiences. And we've got a couple of clients who fall a little bit outside of that, which we can work with, but it's not really, you know, that's kind of our bread and butter. But this tool does go broader than that. Like anybody doing content can fit into this, because we don't necessarily have to build up our own writing team with our own expertise. We can kind of allow you to use this with your own writers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, writing content, managing that, it's kind of like a back-end process, like internally into the company. You know, it's very different from the service where you're creating the content on behalf of people. You can't possibly find experts in every single thing in the world, so you kind of have to niche. So do you want to get into I want to hear about, okay, once you decide to do it, what steps do you take to kind of make sure you've gone through the right process of, yes, this is actually a viable idea and people want to pay for it. It's not just me coming up with something internally and not double checking.
Yeah, I can talk through that. I think I brushed over some of these steps in previous weeks, but I'll try to give a little bit more detail here. So it started with just brainstorming ideas. And most of the ideas are things that I've been thinking about for over a year. You know, someday we might have a tool that might do something like this. And I had thoughts of like four or five different types of software tools related to content marketing that could potentially come from audience ops. And ultimately this is what it boiled down to. And my first step was get the things out of my head and into notes. And then from there it was get it out of notes and into a visual wireframe form. So I spent probably a good week or two designing the first version of wireframes. And at that point I was calling it Audience Ops Platform. And that was actually even bigger than what it is now. But my next step from there, once I had about five or six screens wireframed out, I sent an email to something like 30 or 35 friends, people that I know and trust. And I showed them those wireframes and I asked for their feedback. I'm just telling them like, hey, this is something new that I'm working on. I was basically asking them to be critical of it. And many people were critical of it, which was really helpful, you know, constructive criticism. That feedback helped me iterate and refine the wireframes a little bit. But then at that point, what I also did was I went onto social media and I did some cold outreach. I followed some advice that you gave me, going into Facebook groups, and I searched on Twitter and a little bit on Quora, and I found something like 20 or 25 people actively searching or asking questions related to content calendar tools. And at this point, by the way, I was still thinking in terms of it being called Audience Ops Platform, but I found myself searching content calendar tools as like the hook. That's probably what people are searching for. And it's true. That's what I saw people actively asking questions about. And so that's what started to click for me that like, you know what, people think of this in terms of a calendar. And then if I really think about it, we think of it in terms of a calendar too, and that would be even more useful. So let's refocus it all around the calendar. And anyway, through the cold outreach to social media people, I got some complete strangers giving me some, they're actually pretty receptive to the idea. Like these are people who are not on my list, not listeners of this podcast, just strangers. And they were like, yeah, this looks great. Nobody's saying like, yeah, take my money at this point. But they're like, yeah, this is intriguing. They're asking me questions. One guy sent me like five emails back, like five paragraphs each.
That's the best. You know? That's the best.
And he's like, yeah, like these are the tools that we use with my team. And this is what sucks about them. And this is what we're looking for and all this stuff. So,
okay. So that gives you some indication of the fact that there's a need, there's desire out there. People do have the problem.
Yeah. So at that point I came to the conclusion like, okay, it should be a calendar. And then I basically spent another week and I redesigned the wireframes almost completely. I kept a lot of the core functionality, but reworked it to work as a simpler calendar.
Mm. Wireframes are so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love them. Like that's what I love.
It's very abstract.
If there's one thing that I like to spend my time working on, it would be the wireframes.
It's all conceptual.
Yeah. The coding, I'm not a coder anymore. Even designing in Photoshop, I used to be a lot better than I am now, but wireframing, I feel pretty good. The next step was, I think I set up the landing page for audienceops.com/calendar. And I took a quick course from Udemy on how to use Keynote to create some funny looking cartoon animations. And I spent like a whole weekend, you know, burning through that and playing around with Keynote. And I came up with those animations that you see on that page. And I wrote a bit of copy about it to try to, you know, here's the pitch, here's the concept in the most simplest form that I can come up with. Here's the explainer page and sign up here to request an invite for early access.
And do you want to give out the URL of that? Just, I feel like people would be interested to see how you put together something that's almost like good enough to explain to people what you're working on.
Yeah, that's audienceops.com/calendar.
Okay, that's what that is.
And so on that page, it's not only the animations and a bit of copy, a headline and the pitch, but then below that I've got an FAQ and giving you a little bit more detail about what's going on with this thing, what is it, and maybe most importantly, here's an indication of pricing. And it's not exact, it's a little bit vague, but it gives you a ballpark range. Actually, I forgot what I wrote on there. I think let me see what I wrote.
Yeah, see, it's kind of just detailing out the big, not so much features, but like what people can actually do.
I try to focus it on like these are the problems and these are the benefits. And with just really vague, like cartoony animations to put some visuals on there. But then in that FAQ, I'm basically throwing out numbers. Like it'll mainly be around $99 a month. There will be an agency plan starting at $299 a month and a limited solo plan starting around $29 a month,
which I will do my best to convince you to eliminate.
Yeah, and actually, after getting a lot of feedback from people from the next step, which I can talk about, there's going to be a middle ground around $49 or $59 a month, because there's a lot of people who are just like a two person partnership, and they're like the $99 may not make sense for us, but we would want to do it around $49 or $59. So I wanted to put out that pricing here on the page just to get it out in front. I mean, it's in small print, but you can read it. And that's a little bit of a pre-qualifier before you even fill out the form. I didn't want to get a lot of people who just have no idea what the pricing is going to be. Then once you fill out the form, you get to the thank you page, which has a long survey on it. I'd say about 50 to 60% of people actually who sign up for the list then fill out the survey, which probably takes them like 5 or 10 minutes to fill out. So once I created this page, which I did pretty quickly, I used our landing pages plugin and just kind of the thing that took the most time was creating those animations. I sent a big blast to my newsletter and just showed it to everyone on my personal newsletter list. Oh, and with that, I created like a 7-minute video of me walking through my detailed wireframes.
That's what you sent out to the list?
Yeah, I created a 7-minute video of walking through like the stuff that I had created in Balsamic, and it's now in the form of a calendar, so it's pretty focused on what it's going to be. I sent them that, and then out of that, got a few hundred people signed up to this early access list, and out of those people, roughly half of them, maybe more, filled out the survey. And through that survey, I got a good indication of, like, one of the questions was, would you like to be invited to be an early access, what I'm calling the inner circle customer group? And there's only going to be 10 to 15 spots in this group. I'm writing this on the survey. I'm going to ask you to prepay. And is this something that you would be interested in? Yes or no? And most people said yes. And then based on the responses to that survey, I basically handpicked about 20 people who I think are just the best fit for this based on the survey results.
Yeah, I will add in my 2 cents here that doing that, the 10, 15 person, let's just call it a beta group without using the word beta, is a really good idea. Because we have not done that, and we have eaten dirt because of it. We get people who sign on and we're like, oh my God, a dream customer. But guess what? We're not really ready for them because we haven't worked everything out because things are early on. And you end up embarrassing yourself instead of just positioning it properly and saying, hey, everything's super early. You're in this early group. We understand everything isn't perfect, but that's why you're in this early group. And they kind of acknowledge that they want to be in the early group and they expect it to not be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just trying to do my best to set expectations as much as I possibly can throughout this whole process. But yeah, I mean, you're right. So the next step I'll talk about in a second, having these calls with those people, even before they paid, just getting their feedback as we go through this little presentation I gave them, there are like 5 new tweaks to the functionality that I'm like, oh, that makes so much more sense that I wouldn't have, that they're just giving me that, like, this is what would make it valuable for me. And I'm like, that's perfect. You know, it's so valuable. But anyway, the next step was, so I handpicked 20 people. I sent them a personal email each. Here's my Calendly. You know, I'm inviting people to these one-on-one calls. And I said something like, you know, you had expressed interest in being in the inner circle group. And so I'm doing these one-on-one calls. On that call, I'll tell you about where things are at, and I'll ask you to prepay to join the group. So that's what I write in the email. Out of the 20 people that I emailed that to, 15 scheduled calls. And as of today, I've held, no, more than 15. Maybe I sent it to like 25 people or something. Like 15 or 16 scheduled calls, 12 ended up paying, and I've got actually 2 more calls later this afternoon. But basically, so I've been holding these calls all of this past week, and what happens is I created a quick slide presentation, probably lasts about 10 minutes or so, and I'm laying out on this slide deck the ideal customers, and I'm asking them, like, do you resonate with any of these pains? We went over the wireframes again. They gave me some feedback on the wireframes. And then I said, here's the roadmap. Here's the plan for the next couple of months. And, you know, September, we're filling up this beta group. October, we start coding. November, we're going to keep coding and show you progress. December is when we're aiming to ship a first very simplified workable version that you could start using. January, we're adding more features. February is when we're targeting to try to get a full version out to the public. I don't think it'll be feature complete at that point, but it'll be ready to launch to the public. And then, you know, we'll continue adding features after that. So I'm like laying out this whole roadmap for them. And then I'm also laying out these features we're aiming to include in that first MVP version. And these features are coming a little bit later. And then these features will come a little bit down the road. So I'm just like laying it all out for them. And then I get into the telling them about the beta program. Here's the pricing for that. You get, you know, a significant lifetime discount. You get a number of months using it for free. And I was basically asking them to pay $200 today if they're a single team, like if they plan to use it on one site, or $500 if they're an agency and they plan to use it for multiple sites and for clients. Out of the 12 people, you know, got a mix of those amounts. And so, you know, it's looking pretty good so far. And most of them, you know,
so full on pre-selling.
Yeah. Full on pre-selling.
Taking money just based on Wireframe's idea. And like
the first couple, like the first two people who bought, I did not have, the only thing I had was a Stripe account, and I literally took their info over the call and I typed it directly into Stripe. And then like the third person was like, you know, I'm ready to buy it, but I just need to run it by my partner. Can you send me a link to sign up online? And I was like, sure, I'll do that. And then got off the call, and then I quickly whipped up a page and I used Phil Dirksen's WP Simple Pay Pro to slap on a Stripe buy button on that page, shot off that URL to the guy, and then, you know, he bought later that night. And then that's what I was using for a lot of the other ones. But
just in time production.
That's right. That's right.
And if you go to Phil Dirksen's WP Simple site and you abandon his purchase, you will get the cart hook email.
Oh, there you go.
Like that incestuous little circle. Hi, Phil.
That's right.
All right, cool. So now, so you've got money, you've got revenue for a software product, and I hate you and everyone else hates you for it, but that's awesome. So what now?
Yeah, I mean, and this is the first time
I actually have to build
developers.
It.
I mean, you know, that's another thing that I started working on this week. But yeah, just to about the pre-selling real quick, like I'll be honest, I've never been totally comfortable with the idea, a little bit nervous to sell something that doesn't exist yet. Like in the past I've built up email lists, and but for this it's like it's such a big product and it's going to require so much investment and time that, you know, I just need that reassurance, you know, that it's right. I mean, I know that it'll help our team at Audience Ops, but I need to know that there are paying customers for this book, because we're self-funding it. And it's going to be a big thing, you know, like that we're investing in probably over the next year and beyond. So, yeah, that's my thinking on that. But you know,
I hear you on the discomfort, but I will say you can always give the money back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that was a key thing. Obviously, saying, you know, 100% money back guarantee, or just if you just decide like I want to go a different direction, anytime, you know, there's no time limit or anything. It's just you know, refund. So developers,
right. This is funny. This is very indicative, I think, of our experience. Not that we're so seasoned, but we have gone through so many different things and screwed things up along the way. At least I know for sure that I have, that we are just now getting to the part of the conversation where it's about building the software, right? This is. A lot of people get it backwards.
I do feel so much more confident now in the process of launching a product and launching a business. I mean, I know that I did it backwards a couple of years ago, and you know, it does, and it's weird. Like even though you hear this process on podcasts and books and courses and stuff, like until you've been through it a couple of times, you don't really get how important it is, I think.
Yeah, because I still do it. I don't know about you. I still, not that I dismiss the importance of it, but you kind of gloss over it. You kind of say, okay, so I have my validation. It's kind of good enough. I want to get to the fun stuff or the next stage. Yeah, it's easy to convince yourself.
Yeah. But so I kind of consider myself a non-technical co-founder these days. I can design, I can code some HTML and CSS, not very good anymore, but that's really about it. I'm no backend developer by any means. And I know the terms Angular and Laravel and Node and these things that get thrown around, but I don't know what the fuck these things are or how to use them or what I'm doing. So that's a scary thing. You know, so what I'm doing about that is, you know, I mean, obviously I'm just asking advice from a lot of more technical people, like, and I've been pointed in the direction of, you know, PHP Laravel seems like a good choice, you know, Angular JS and a couple other frameworks and recommendations that I've heard from people. But in terms of really making some high level decisions, especially when it comes to evaluating code and doing code reviews and things like that, I really needed help. So I asked a trusted friend, seasoned software engineer background to kind of consult with me on for the first couple of weeks. And basically he's helping me, he helped design the test project that I'll be giving developers, which will start today. And then next week he'll help review the code from those people. We did a review of the wireframes and he kind of tore them apart from a tech perspective. And like, these are the things you need to be careful of. And these things will take longer than others. And so he's kind of giving me a bit of a reality check and filling in the gaps where I just wouldn't know the right questions to ask.
Okay, that's very helpful. It's the expectation management is crazy difficult.
Yep. Yeah, yep. And choosing the tech stack and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and so what's it going to look like? Is it one developer doing everything? Is it a designer and a dev? Is it a front-end dev, a back-end dev, plus a designer? Or the design? What's it going to look like?
So for the design, I mean, the wireframes are already pretty detailed, but next week, the plan is I'll be actually talking to Jane Portman, who was on this podcast a couple weeks ago, really talented designer, UI, UX expert. So she's going to be helping out with just a little bit of the UI. And after she does a screen or two, I'm going to then take that look and feel and I'll work on the rest of the screen. So basically the design will be handled on my end. And then I'll be hiring a development team to cover the back-end development and the front-end development. And so what I did was I got a few referrals from some friends, but I also put out an ad on Upwork and collected something like 50 applications over the past 2 weeks. I sifted through those and I narrowed it down to 6 top candidates. And I invited those 6 people to interviews this week and I interviewed them. 5 of them are in Eastern Europe and 1 was actually in the US. Out of those 6 interviews, which are now finished, I basically narrowed it down to a top 3 that I like just from a communication standpoint, and they seem like they know what they're doing. And so those 3, probably later today, I'll invite to start this test project. And then next week, we'll look at the code and see how they did on that, and we'll pick one and we'll go from there. And so these teams they range from... One of them is just a 3-person team. They're literally 3 guys in an office in Montenegro. and one guy's a front-end guy, one's a back-end guy, and one kind of does it all. Other teams are like, there's like a team of 14 people in the Ukraine. There's a team of 25 in the Ukraine.
So you're not talking to individual developers, you're talking to teams.
Right. There was one guy who's a solo individual, says he's a full stack developer, and which is great, but
in theory, it
could, even if he's great at front end and back end, it'll just take longer if he's doing both rather than having, 2 dedicated people.
Yeah. For us going from 1 dev to 2, like, it's more than double. It changes the whole thing. Our process is like polished and professional and careful, and deployments are controlled by one person. It's just changed the nature of the whole thing.
Right.
I really like the idea when you say a team of a few people in the same location that work together, they know what they're each are good at, they communicate well. That's very promising.
Yeah. So I really like that idea. So, I've been pretty impressed with most of the communication just on the interviews. And then we'll see how the code goes, and then we'll get rolling from there.
All right. And how much flexibility, not flexibility, how much elasticity do you have in your budget? At what point are you like, is it?
That's a good question.
Thanks for the budget. Anything up to double than that, and I'm still cool. Anything above double, and I start killing people.
Well, in terms of like setting expectations there, I've basically been, everybody has like an hourly rate. And everyone seems to be pretty flexible. Like, well, we could do weekly flat rates, or we could do like for this, a full project fee would not make sense because it's just too big and too long.
Yeah, you can't tell.
But what I've been, what I would prefer on this, and what I basically agreed to with most of them is a weekly rate, and we'll just take it week by week. And this, like, basically, this is the flat fee that I can budget, and I need front end and back end covered. If that's two of you, if that's all three of you,
right? If that's all your time or half your time or whatever it is,
yeah. And you know, most of them are coming in on budget, so it's looking pretty good. The advice that I had from Justin, actually, Justin McGill, was, and I'm kind of thinking through the best way to do this, but there should be some incentive to ship the MVP or ship some set of features by a certain date, you know, rather than dragging it on. And I mean, it's hard to really know before we haven't even broken ground on code, on the first line of code. So it's hard to make any hard predictions before I know what the pace is going to be. But maybe like after 2 weeks in, we'll kind of come up with some agreement there. Like maybe a bonus if you hit this milestone.
Right, something if it's by a certain date.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I feel like I'd have to think through that incentive piece because it doesn't really work along standard incentive lines. There are times when you want people to hurry the hell up, and sometimes it's, no, don't rush this part. Don't take the short route on this thing. Because everything's going to be built on top of that, and making it more flexible now will be better for later. So I think you have to be careful with it. I feel like once you know exactly what needs to happen and when, then it's okay. We know what you need to do. If you can do it faster, then there might be incentive. But right now, I think it's still unclear.
As much as I do care about coding standards and best practices and building a firm, strong foundation, this is still an unproven product, even though we have pre-sales.
It's more proven than it's not at zero.
It's not at zero, but and I do want to be careful and do all the right things in terms of best practices. But I feel like shipping before the end of the year a baseline MVP and not dragging it on beyond that is a high priority for me. And I think that,
yeah, the timing. This is so challenging because I hear you say this and I agree 100% with you. And yet my experience was very painful when I did it that way. Because we built an MVP and it started producing revenue and we got up to 5K in MRR and then it exploded.
I don't mean finish the product and then start selling it and not keep working on it. Like the idea is just to get something usable and not even selling it to the general public yet, but something functional and usable, and then continuing to build it throughout 2017.
You know? Right. It's understood that there is no stop in the development. I mean, there are fits and starts, but
I just think that keeping the momentum up and not letting all these technical hurdles drag on is just as important, if not more important, to the business as a whole, as dotting your I's, crossing your T's, you know, getting everything perfectly built.
Yeah, one concept we talk about in Carthook is like the relay race, and we have a baton, and we see the baton right now is on the dev side, and we need to get to the point where you hand off that baton to me so I can start selling, right? And that doesn't mean they're done with the race and they go take a break, but now what they're working on, it's almost like the marketing side has no excuses. The marketing side is no longer waiting on dev to get there. Marketing can start doing its thing and selling and pushing, building a list and doing whatever activities make sense. But it's that initial transition that it's just really hard to get to because there's this weird, back and forth, because marketing wants the product to be able to do certain things. And there's this natural inclination to, you know, to add features and make better and functionality and all that. And so it's almost like you move in the goalpost little by little. And at some point, you just have to make that transition, hand off the baton, and then say, okay, marketing is good to go on selling things. You guys keep improving. And then there's the feedback loop. But it's that initial transition is super hard.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to segment the list. Like, definitely push on growing the list, but just get it, reach certain milestones that you're able to invite five paying customers, and then another five, and then another five. And it's not like, it doesn't have to be like we're building and it's dragging on, and then we're going to open the floodgates and let customer number one and the rest of the thousand do it. It's,
which is hard. That's hard. In our situation, I feel when we open the gates at all, when we launch marketing site, blog post, and a few ads, we're going to have 30 signups. And you can't handle 30 signups with a new product. Not unless you really spent a different version of building and amount of time and the size of your team and all that most bootstrap, right, companies our size don't go through. So there's going to be a wave, the fire hose at some point.
I'm sure I'm going to be in for a rude reality check, probably on multiple occasions in the coming months. But I guess I'm just saying, like, I've heard just people looking at the wireframes are saying, this is big, this is going to take a long time. And I hear that, and I agree it will take a long time, but I want to make sure that I'm the one prioritizing the timeline. And
what gets done first? That's you can do everything, but yeah. What gets prioritized?
And I just want to make shipping a priority too. But that comes down to budget too. It's going to be tight, to be honest. We've got a little bit of budget from the pre-sell from the pre-purchases. On top of that, I've actually been saving, like, probably for the last 4 or 5 months, I started a separate business savings account, and I've been trying to drop a little bit each month into that, and kind of saving up for, like, just having a nest egg for something. Like, 5 months ago, I didn't know that we were going to do a software at this time, but I just wanted to have, I knew that we had like 10% left over after all the, after the salary is paid and everything, that we could do something with. Let's make sure that we're setting it aside and have a bit of a starting point. So we're covered for at least the first couple of months, and we continue to grow the service, which, drops off a little bit of profit that we're reinvesting in. But to be completely honest, it's going to be fairly tight, I think, to keep it going.
I think we're going to spend a good amount of time on this podcast talking about that cash flow management. Because we're in the same boat. We've spoken about it before. Getting people into your software product to pay for the monthly fee is not the only way to sell your software product. There are things you can do. There are the annual thing you can encourage, the webinar thing you can do. So I think both of us are going to manage that over the next few months. It'll be interesting to see what works and what just doesn't.
Yeah, and at this point, I look at our done-for-you service, the productized service, as very purely our funding source. It keeps that whole side of the business afloat and running, and the team and everything. But we've got a couple of leads in the pipeline who are talking about annual service, like paying annually for the done-for-you service.
That's healthy.
That would be great, because it basically funds the next 6 months of this product, And I'm still pushing on that. Like, I'm not really doing any new big initiatives on the service, but I'm all about selling it and growing it and keeping that running, because that's the engine right now.
Right. Yeah. Now you're going to split your attention. Yeah. I think it's going to be a very interesting look over the next year. What I like is that the market you're talking about is just enormous and growing, and the significance of content marketing and getting it right is sufficiently high. And I like that the people, this is part of why I want to convince you to remove that lower tier. People who use a calendar and are managing multiple people, they have money, and that's a good audience to sell to.
Yeah, that's true. Pricing, I'm sure will get tweaked probably a number of times as we go forward. But about splitting my attention, it's been like, for the last couple of months, I've basically systemized almost all of audience ops. From the time someone signs up, they get handed right off to the managers and the team, and they're doing the kickoff calls, and they're doing the support and the writing and the production.
That's what allows you to even contemplate doing this.
Yeah, I had a salesperson doing some stuff for a while, but I actually jumped back into sales myself. So I'm still doing the sales calls for the audience app service, which I like doing. And, you know, I think I could fit in a handful of sales calls a week. That's really the only time I do a team call with the managers every 2 weeks. And beyond that, I do a couple of like escalated tickets that come to me and I'll answer them, but that's just a couple hours a week. So the rest of my time, I'm focused full time on this. And this gets back to in the beginning, you know, talking about like, I'm in a much better position today to do something like this than I was a year ago, or even 3 or 4 years ago, when I was freelancing, because I was so tied up in doing a lot of other work myself that projects like this would fall to like nights and weekends. But now, you know, the business is self-sustaining, and I'm basically freed up to focus my time on building. And that's kind of where I think I should be doing, you know.
I agree. Cool, man. So
that's
new where software at. Audience ops calendar coming at you. I like it, man.
Cool, man. Thanks. You know, anyone listening, of course, I'm hungry for feedback and thoughts. If you take a look at it, shoot me an email and let me know what you think. But yeah.
Yeah. Next week we'll do some updates, get caught up on where things are in each of our businesses. And we got some cool guests coming up.
Yep.
Cool, man.
Forward to that. Bye.
Always a pleasure.
All right, Jordan.
Have a good weekend, bud.
See you.